marketing.
The big hand that starts out as well, like good started, like to welcome everybody here. It's been 3 months since we've gotten together, and we've got some new faces and a couple of old things to talk about. And just if we get going, then maybe we can leave early. Whatever. I'd like to welcome our guests here today and on the table. If we can introduce ourselves so they'll know who we are. And I'd like to welcome Travis Dutton, is the new head of solid waste for the county. And we had a delightful trip up to Findlay Buttes and to Wasco with him, and learned a lot too, along with good folks. So if we could start with you, Warren.
My name's Warren. I work for Slow Food Southwest Washington. I'm in my first year of committee here. So,
Rip Wilson, represent Southeast Clark County, and I put in my notice of retirement today.
You're right. No way you can retire. You know,
exactly.
Early, you know, it's never too early to retire.
Yes.
I'm Alan Jessica. I'm the chair, and I represent the public interest groups. And I'm the guy that goes out and the butt stops here. We did some picking up the other day and enjoyed all of this solid waste thing. And I've been with us since 2011. And glad to see all of you here. Rich?
I'm Rich McConaughey, the City of Vancouver representative on this panel. I'm Chris Proctor. I'm the Southwest Vancouver representative. I'm the rookie on there with Warren.
I'm Steve Willis, and I'm North Clark County's representative.
And
that's
the wrong day. You know, I mean, that should be a little bit late, but, so, you know. Did you want everyone to?
Sure.
Okay. Kim Harlan in Clark County, Public Health, Solid Waste Operations.
Travis Dutton, Solid Waste Program Manager, Clark County.
Channel Williams, I'm the Office of Solid Waste and Environmental Outreach here for County.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Allie Cooper. I'm the at water trip, so it's awkward.
We do have a guest, Ruby, here today.
I'm Ruby Irving, I'm the Solid Waste Director for Cooktown County.
Oh. Glad to have you with us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Let's go down the list. Melissa.
Yep, I'm Melissa Sutton. I'm the Environmental Health Specialist for Clark County Public Health and Solid Waste Enforcement.
I'm Beth Simon. I work with Waste Connections, and this is my first time at SWAC.
Welcome aboard.
I'm Jordan Berkeley, Operations Manager, Columbia Resource Company, West Van and Washougal.
I'm Derek Ranta, District Manager for Clark County, Waste Connections in Clark County.
Back to the nose bleeds.
Oh.
I'm Mike, Senior Solid Waste Guy for Clark County.
Okay. Well, glad everybody's here. Healthy, wealthy, and wise, I suppose. Let's start with since we've done the roll call, I guess, of the approval of the minutes, take a few minutes to look it over and see if there's anything stands out. It was Kim sent it out by email, but you know, it's always nice to look over too. Approve the minutes. Bell. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I've got a whole lot of stuff to say to you. So again, I'm Travis Dutton. I think I just wrapped up my second month here. Previously, I was a commercial program coordinator for the city of Beaverton, and then previously was a project coordinator for Pierce County Solid Waste for about 8 years up in Tacoma and Pierce County. So right now, I've been spending a lot of time just getting to know all the program, get to know what everybody's working on, and try to figure out largely how to continue to work with all of our partners and make sure that we're working as a cohesive team, and how I can best support everybody. So probably we'll get a chance to get around and talk to everybody one-on-one, and we've been doing a lot of system tours and a lot of data digging and contract digging and trying to figure out all this stuff. So it's basically been a fire hose for the last 2 months, and I'm assuming it'll be another 6 months to 12 months of a fire hose of information. So appreciate the chance to get around and talk to everybody. So I've got a bunch of updates. This is the first time I've provided these updates to this WAC, obviously. So if I go too long or go too short, please feel free to tell me to shut up or ask questions if I don't say enough. So I'll start with kind of overall program changes. Obviously, I'm a new change to the staff. Again, I started about 2 months ago. Other changes in the program is that Sally Fisher, who was previously an environmental outreach specialist for Green Neighbors, has been promoted to a program coordinator too. So she is acting in a... she had been previously acting out of class as the program manager for the Green Programs, and her role now is very similar in that she'll be helping coordinate and working with me to make sure that all aspects of our program are working together, and then for all of the projects that we're going to share and talk about, that everybody's kind of working together, and that both operations and the people that are talking to the public realize the benefits of all the projects that we're working on. So that being said, Sally's EOS position is vacant, and we are just about to start a recruitment process for that. And we're also looking at hiring a, we're also in the process of recruiting for a program tech, so that would be a position that supports the work that Pete Dubois and Michelle Pacinich do in Master Composters and Green Schools programs. So applications are closed, we've got all of those, and we're kind of going through that recruitment process right now. And then we'll continue to recruit depending on who moves into what position so that we have the same staffing levels that we have right now, but maybe in a little bit different roles than they had been previously. So, on the operations side, we're getting ready to do our regional system study, which I am making the assumption that is not a new topic to this group. Is that correct?
I mentioned before, right?
Briefly.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think just the idea is to kind of make sure we do some, figure out what data gathering we can do to prepare for the next 20 years or more of solid waste and recycling and waste reduction in Clark County. So trying to figure out what data and research we can do ourselves and what information we can collect, and then go out to bid to find a vendor that will be able to take in all of the variables and all of the scenarios and all of the system details that we have now and figure out what that's going to look like for the future. So we're just in the initiation phase of that project, where we're working on trying to get what all of our stakeholders expect that to look like, and kind of spell out what that's going to be. So I'm working with the City of Vancouver and steering committee and trying to distract information and questions about what we really need to look at as part of this. So again, it's very early on, but we'll be going to, we have kind of an interesting budget scenario where in the transition, our budget is kind of a mystery to the new program. I don't want to say our budget is a mystery, but we're just working out what's left. So we're going through council next week to ask to use fund balance to fund this regional system study, since it's a very specific project and it is a very necessary project, and to ensure that we have the funds to do that, we're going to be going to council to ask for permission to use fund balance to do that project. That'll be, I think we're there November 7th at that council meeting. So. Other operations, I think Derek said he got it, but we've extended the single family recycling contract for 1 year while we get together, kind of kick off the regional system study, but also give ourselves ample time to develop an RFP to since that contract is concluding, to go out to bid for continued recycling collection in Clark County. It looks like we're going to talk about the tipping fee, so I'll save that update for later. But in addition to that, there's an additional tip fee regarding the property acquisition. So Waste Connections acquired a piece of property at Central Transfer Station to put in a deceleration lane. And that was approved by the county, and we're finally getting around to getting that approved to allow that piece of property that's going to eventually be turned into a slowdown or a deceleration lane and an expanded exit lane at Central Transfer Station to be built, so they're going to be able to pay for that through a incentive fee that is going through the approval process right now. Can't think of anything else on the operations side that I've glossed over, Kim or Mike.
Okay.
Any questions?
Okay, let's march along. Solid waste enforcement.
Oh, do you want? I've still got green programs. Go. Is that your polite way to tell me to shut up? I've got a longer list of green program updates to give you. And forgive me, I'm going to be. They provided me with some updates today, so I might be reading this off of some of their emails, but I want to make sure that I cover everybody. So for master composter recyclers, they're going to be starting their next round of training in January, and Pete reported today that they have the largest class that they've ever had. I think that they have exceeded. I think they cap at 30, and they have 40 people right now that are going to be going through the master composter workshop series.
Trainings.
So he was very excited about that and having the biggest class ever. It's a really good thing. It's been growing. Additionally, they're working on kind of tracking everybody's volunteer time, what they put in, so we can start recognizing our master composters on their successful volunteering and the time that they've spent putting into the program. And, you know, it's only, can't buy them cars or anything, but we're going to try and at least recognize them in some way to show respect and appreciation for the 5, 10, 20 years that they have and will put in. And additionally, I didn't mention in the staffing, but also we had four, and then we had five, and now we're back to four AmeriCorps members that have been divvied up amongst Master Composter, Green Neighbors, Green Schools, and Green Business. And one of those is working with Pete on some composting demonstrations that work out at Heritage Farm. So if you're out there, you might see some additional composting experiments or strategies going on out there. So,
hey, Travis, how many classes do they have a year? Is it?
They do like a fall series and a spring series. So many, and these are of their.
So two.
Yeah, two. Well, there's different topics for each one. So you'll see. Oops, I've got that. It's the onion and lasagna, composting, backyard composting. And green cleaning. So the first two on this have passed, but the green cleaning workshop is coming up, and he wanted to make sure we let I let you guys know that there are spots open on that workshop still. And then the training program to become a master composter recycler starts in January. I think it's a few months. Ten total for the training.
And then they're required to give 30 years back.
30 years. You're right.
I'm just saying, we're stick with that. 30 years of service back. Collective. Yeah. 30 hours of service for the remainder of that year. So if they can finish up in April, and they've got April to December to give 30 hours of volunteer work back, which is through public trainings and presentations or work at the farm or work at the compost sites or things like that. So, and then I think it's 10 hours a year for every year after that. So.
And they attended a lot of events. They were at the old Apple Tree Fest. They've been at the farmer's market.
You don't happen to know like how successful getting those hours back are? Is there like a number you guys have about that?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It starts once people the 10 year or 10 hours is a little more flexible. And then people often, a lot of people just don't report it, but we know they're out there. They've had the training, they're talking to their friends, they're talking to their family, and they might not be actually reporting all these conversations. But that's actually hours they're getting back. Mm-hmm. You know, so that first 30 hours, or yeah, hours, it's hours. We do track like more stringent, but the 10 hours.
But that's information too that they may not have in the transfer. In the, now that the program is in Clark County and Pete has been running it, I know that he's trying to get a more robust tracking system, and that's one of the things he and the AmeriCorps are working on, is being able to more accurately track what hours they get and who gives what hours. So they're not sure that they can look back right now retroactively and see over the last X number of years how many hours they got and feel confident that that data is accurate. So that's a system that they're building now using what they know, and then moving forward be able to track those hours on a much more precise or trustable or verifiable version. Yeah. So, yeah. Do green business next. So Sarah Kern sent the following, so that there is the nomination period for the Green Awards is open until November 30th, which those awards will be announced along with all of our other program awards at the Green Gala on February 22nd at Kiggins Theater. And there is a news release that we can share, or we could probably put in the notes. Would that be the best way to? But it basically it spells out what a Green Business Award is and what you have to do to acquire it, but those are open until November 30th. So I'll make sure that that press release goes in something that you all get so that you can kind of take a look at that and then nominate, of course, businesses that you feel like deserve that award. Nomination deadline is 5 p.m. on November 30th, and then again at the Green Gala on February 22nd. Any questions on that? Okay. For the Green Neighbors program, again, so right now Jill has been working to support Sally while Sally was working out of class, and now that position is vacant, but Jill is still picking up some of that work while we do the recruitment. Some of the updates that she has, so on September 23rd, they had a shred event. I believe it was at the New Seasons on the 100.
Whole Foods.
The shred event had 400 plus participants. On September 24th, they had an author talk, Robert Michael Pyle, Where Bigfoot Walks, who delivers conservation and environmental conservation information through talking about Bigfoot. And apparently somebody from a famous Bigfoot TV show also showed up to talk. I don't know who the Bigfoot celebrities are, but this was a big deal in the world of Bigfeet. That person was there. And there were over about 150 attendees, and it was at the bookstore.
Vintage
bookstore.
And they, crowded the place. People were waiting outside. It was very successful.
Did anybody here go?
No.
But you would have if you knew that
this
guy was going to be there with Bigfoot.
Mr. Bigfoot would have been.
Like ceramic Bigfoot impressions.
You actually had brought those?
Yeah, I wasn't able to go, but I wish I had. October 15th was the Green Neighbors 5th anniversary at the Water Resources Education Center. I took my niece to that, and she was lost her mind when they brought out the owl. But they had a... I think I said 150 plus attendees. It was definitely a packed house. People coming to celebrate Green Neighbors' 5th anniversary. And it was literally, I think, on the day of the initiation of the program that it started. But they had a falconer attend who brought a couple birds of prey to talk about pollution and yard care and how pollution working up through the food chain affects some of these larger animals. And then one thing that I actually did not ever connect myself is that litter on the highway is a big problem because it brings rodents to the highway, which brings these hawks and eagles to the highway, and that death on the highway is one of the largest fatalities for birds of prey in the Pacific Northwest. So I had to put that system together so that there's a litter, preventing litter also preserves our birds of prey population, which controls our rodent population. So that was just one thing I learned while I was there. It was very cool to see a vulture, an owl, and then a specific species of hawk that I don't remember what it was called, but it was impressive. So, and they got a lot of really great feedback. And then the last one on October 28th, they had their medication take back, and I think it was 4,121 pounds of medication were collected, with that includes packaging. There were about 1,300 participants bringing in those 4,000 pounds of medication. And that there were participating sites in Battleground Police Department, Peace Health, Kaiser, and Washougal Police Departments. So it was a big, well-supported event. And I think, did she say there's going to be updated numbers once they remove the packaging, but then it shouldn't be a significant difference?
I don't think there'll be updated numbers.
Yeah.
4,000 pounds?
Yeah, it's 4,100 pounds. Mm-hmm.
Two times.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I volunteer also at Legacy Hospital. They have an outpatient pharmacy, and they have a thing that looks like an automated money machine for putting pills in. So you, in between any of these drives, you want to get rid of it, you just take it to the outpatient pharmacy in the B professional building, in the B building, and they've got a place to put it. So I just stumbled on it. You know, they didn't put up any signs into anything, and I said, what's this big blue machine in here? Oh, that's where we put the pill, put excess pills, or, you know, the ones that you're going to throw away. I said, in between all these drives? Yeah, bring them up anytime. Okay.
I have a question about medication take back. Have we considered, instead of using a police station, using like a fire station or another municipality, if I'm in possession of some narcotics that I probably shouldn't have but still want to get rid of, I'm not sure I want to take those to a police department, just out of fear of being in trouble.
I don't know to what extent that question has been asked, and I don't know if it's just the locations, and I know that it's heavily no questions asked advertised, but I don't know, and I know that it's not, I understand that it's not police department staff doing it.
Right.
But I don't know to what extent those conversations, I know the hospital locations make sense, but I don't know to what extent less intimidating locations or the whether that has impacted
that. I had a conversation with some folks, and you know, if it came to the no questions asked, it kind of leached onto the why a police department as opposed to a fire station would be, you know, they potentially it would draw more people and minimize their thought of risk.
Mm-hmm. The perceived risk.
Correct.
Well, they've done it in other places like Fisher's Landing too, you know, at the bus place. And some other places from time to time, and I've dropped off pills twice, and there was never a question. You know, just like putting them in a being a dropping mail lot, but a mailbox, it was no big deal.
Yeah, and I don't know to what extent the police department reaches out, as it's also something that they do.
Sure.
And whether, so I don't know. That would be something we can ask and bring back to what questions have been asked about that perceived risk and whether they've seen better numbers at hospitals versus police departments.
Right.
And I think there's been some history of the Drug Enforcement Agency used to require that controlled substances be given to law enforcement. And I think that's still part of that, although I think they've made some other opportunities where pharmacies can do it, since they have those there to start with, is where they come from. So but I think that's part of the history of why law enforcement was involved, and I think they're also now involved because they don't want people, drugs getting into the wrong hands.
Sure.
So they're concerned about that.
One last program update for Green Schools that I have is that the 8th annual Green Schools Summit is coming up next Thursday at Clark College, and they will be bringing 26 schools together and having presentations and talking about their overall Green School program. You can talk about that if you were. I wouldn't have you to give up talking about stuff.
So you might have heard of the repair cafes that we were putting on in partnership with Columbia Springs and I think some few other agencies.
There's one coming up in Battleground on November 8th, so there's some flyers. They're really great events, try to promote people to reuse their items by repairing them. And it's also kind of cute. So like my son, he had a little penguin stuffed animal that its wing fell off. And so we went there and they set it back up for him. And now his penguin fell better. But people come with, there's all kinds of stuff that's there too. It's like small appliances, jewelry, electronics, there's a bunch of sewers. I can repair clothing and other items. So.
And after this one, Columbia Springs just received a grant to take on this program wholly. So we'll still be supporting them with a little bit of in-kind, but it'll be less. It'll be more in the hands of Columbia Springs in the future. One last other thing I just caught is that the AmeriCorps staff, Jesse, for Green Businesses, has started working with restaurants in Battleground to get them signed up for composting service, and has identified that only about two-thirds of the restaurants in Battleground have recycling in general. So that's a push right now that Green Business is working on with their AmeriCorps staff, is restaurants in Battleground, which...
Food waste, yes.
Which is another last little piece of information is I grew up, I feel like I should share this, it's important, is that I grew up and graduated, and I grew up and did kindergarten through all high school in Battleground. So that's, this is home county for me, just FYI. So.
Hometown boy.
Those are all of my updates, and complete. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, can we move on to the enforcement?
Chuck Hartman apologized. He had to step away for an emergency that came up, but he apologized.
Hi, I'm Melissa, environmental health specialist with Clark County Public Health. Nice to see you. I do have pictures. I was not going to trouble Dana with doing a whole PowerPoint presentation today. So you should have received the quarterly report. This quarter we received 54 complaints. We resolved 59. That's because we have carryover from the quarters before, so in case those numbers don't necessarily make sense when you're looking at them. We've changed the format. As you know, we don't have funding currently through CPG, so we cannot file our report through Ecology's online reporting system. So we've kind of taken a little bit from the old information clearinghouse, a little bit from the new, taken out all of the extraneous things that didn't really matter to me, and we've come up with this new format. So hopefully it gives you a little bit more information, a little bit more concise, and a little bit more readable. I was going to share with you my inspection reports with pictures, however it was 31 megabytes this quarter. So we weren't able to send it out. If you're interested in any of that, we can try to figure something out, but it's too large for our system. Also, we closed out our last biennium at the end of June with Ecology, so our funding is complete with them. We closed everything out. I did have a presentation that I could share with you later with fun pictures. Which also makes it too large of a file. But just kind of summarizing our last biennium. So kind of some highlights from the last biennium. We had our new solid waste facility for the Washougal Stormwater Decamp Facility, so thank you all for your efforts on that. Circle C Landfill's request to terminate post-closure, which we are still working with them. Chuck and I met with them in September. We provided them comments back with Ecology. They had some technical questions about groundwater monitoring sampling, trying to figure out groundwater monitoring possibilities in the below the toe of the landfill, those kinds of things. So we're still working with them, but we haven't received a response from our early October email. We had the major dead cow issue, so some of you may remember that. On a sad note, the farmer who had the cattle has passed away. He passed away about 2 weeks before he was to be charged with criminal charges through animal control. But the family has taken over. They are reestablishing the farm. They have completely cleared out all of the manure. They worked, I worked extensively with them over the summer through Clark Conservation District as well, making sure that all of the manure and animal carcasses and bones were dispersed amongst the property at an agronomic rate. And I still have the file open. Next summer, the family plans to decommission the lagoon at that location. So that was a big thing that we worked on last year. We also have some new solid waste exempt facilities that we reviewed their plans. North Fork Recycling, we had to deny due to land use. LN Supply, Outdoor Living, we're still waiting for land use approval through our planning department. It's been 2.5 years. One would think it shouldn't take that long. Royal Rangers Outpost Number 4 was approved. EH Metals is still pending land use approval. I received information from code enforcement that they should receive that hopefully this quarter. So crossing our fingers. And Simon Metals used to be IMS Electronics. They've taken over electronic recycling here in Clark County. And they've kind of repartnered with Waste Connections and CRC, so they are accepting our e-waste at this time. We have some fun pictures I'd like to share. We had our lot closure, so we worked with our transfer station last year on getting our containers fixed and repaired after we realized that they have these large gaping holes that have left leachate. During the lot closure, so that should be complete by the end of this year as well. Our new Oshugo facility.
What do you do with old containers? The lot closure?
What will happen with the new, with the old shipping containers? Will
the
they
ones
be
that
scrapped?
Are beyond this repair will be scrapped.
Scrapped.
Okay. With a tour, you have to torch them and tie them up?
We don't own them, so I couldn't tell you how the Tidewater disposes of their own by Tidewater barges.
They don't sink in a lagoon or anything.
They're in Cleveland, probably.
There we go.
So we continue with solid waste enforcement. Here's a beautiful before and after picture.
Active nature. Wind blew down the fence, revealing all of the garbage in the backyard. So thankfully for the wind, we were able to see the violation and then follow up and do enforcement. To get that cleaned up. And then this is before and afters on the manure. So these here are the before and the after. So, yeah. I did omit the dead cows, so. Yeah.
She didn't omit them when she showed them to me, though.
Did not. Pardon?
I feel kind of cheated.
Take them out there, wouldn't you, next time?
I will. Yeah. Do you have any questions about the new format or anything that you would like to see that isn't on here? Or?
By the way, she takes great pictures.
Thank you. If anyone wants a good dead cow picture for Christmas, let me draw.
Thanks, Melissa.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay. City of Vancouver.
Tanya could be here tonight, so I'm going to fill in. A few short things. Meat coupons are out there and are good from the 1st of October through December. Did you all get your curbside newsletter? There's a coupon in there. I was going to bring that and I left it in the car. And it's also available online. Derek's going to mention that. He comes up, looks just like the black and white one. The other program we have going on in Vancouver within our neighborhoods that starts this weekend is we put out boxes over the weekend, like a drop box in leafy neighborhoods, and we let the neighbors nearby know about them and send postcards to people within a few blocks so that they can haul their leaves there if they don't maybe have a trailer or a pickup truck or something to get it delivered. We've also been working over the last 6 months or so with ShareHouse. They have a group of three or four individuals that work 3 days a week. They're called Talking Trash. And there are folks that have been homeless and are learning some job skills through this. They go and pick up litter and belongings left in the right of way in the downtown area. That's working pretty well. We're hoping to continue that next year. And then the final item is the city collection rates are anticipated to go up. We have a couple city council meetings in November to look at that, and I think the rates, the proposed rates will be published in the Columbia about a week from now. So, and some of that accounts for the tip fee increase, and then the CPI and fuel. Fuel also had a significant increase over the last year. That's what I got.
I saw the coupon was also in the wastewater building. It came up this year, or this month. So.
That Talking Trash program, is that what it's called? I've come across that before. I think it's a great program. I don't know if we have any role in like supporting or like. I think it should be increased if it's possible. It's just, I really.
We're looking at options to go from right now the 3 days they're working is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I think Sunday they're going to have to haul material out to CPR because West Van's closed. So we'd like to expand that to more days. It's a long time between Sunday at noon and Friday at noon, or Friday morning. So we're looking to see if that can increase. At some point, we would like to look at maybe at the downtown businesses maybe helping play a role in that in terms of the funding piece. But for now, we're basically taking funding that we've used for the county corrections crews. They haven't had the crews available, so we're basically taking money that's been budgeted for that and using that to. So we've got a grant with Sharehouse to help them fund that and give those people, you know, wages for the hours they work.
Yeah.
Waste Connection.
Derek Grant with Waste Connection. So real quick, Rich mentioned the recycling refresher. This went out to households. When did it be mailed? Beth Simon did a good deal of work on this year along with a lot of our other partners. But she created the document itself.
Second week in October
to all households in Clark County, even if they're not on our current service system. We don't know exactly how many people that is, but it's somewhere between 5% and 10%, maybe as high as 15% of the county are not currently on curbside service. So, but it does have kind of all the goodies in there. You got your instructions on recycling, and we'll talk about some of the recycling issues going on right now, leaf disposal, all sorts of goodies in there for that. Beth did a great job. Nice job. We have not seen Sasquatch at any of our transfer stations. Sorry. We're keeping an eye out for them. We're working with the city of Vancouver on a downtown dumpster program to try, I don't know if you guys have talked about it, SWAC or not, but trying to remove some of the dumpsters from the urban core of Vancouver and get them off the curb into a more suitable circumstance. Over the years, they've just been allowed to kind of migrate out. And we have a lot of these kind of central sections outside of restaurants and other places. And obviously, as downtown's becoming more vibrant, we're trying to come up with some solutions to move those into either a shared enclosure or back into the buildings in some way. I think I could get them off the curb right now. The Gorge Fire, you guys are all aware of the issues with the Eagle Creek Fire. I don't know how much detail I want to get into it, but basically, that shut down barge service for a few days on the Columbia, and obviously all of our garbage goes via barge, so it caused some issues. We were getting, you know, pretty short on containers. We run a pretty just-in-time system with Tidewater right now, so it was causing some issues on that side. But we did make it through. Luckily, the Coast Guard allowed Tidewater to take a couple of barges upon. I don't know what they call it, but
waivers.
Pardon me? They gave them a waiver on an individual basis. We worked with the county and talked to emergency services to try and push that forward a little bit, and they were allowed one of the barges to come down. But obviously with the smoke and traffic on the river, just dealing with the fire, was quite an issue, but we were able to continue to move garbage up and down the river, but it was going to become an issue if it had gone probably one or two more days. It would have caused some issues. So we're having a lot of conversations right now with not only in Clark County, but in Metro, because all the Metro systems were obviously impacted pretty heavily. They had to go around Mount Hood to get out to their landfills out in Arlington, which instead of being able to do two trips a day, you can do one, and that presents all sorts of issues, whether it's wages for the drivers or just general efficiencies and being able to move the material. So
a lot of fuel, too.
Right, yeah. And so there's a lot of conversations going on right now about what would happen in that. The good thing about the river that we have in place is when we get into winter, you know, we still run during the winter. Portland may have to shut down because the freeway shuts down, but we'll continue to run. It's just these kind of natural disasters. And then there's obviously some concerns about landslides now that all the vegetation's been burned off. I think that they said that there's sections where there's like 90 to 100% chance that there's going to be a landslide this winter with rain. So what does that mean for us? Probably not a huge deal on the Clark County side. We do truck some material out of Washougal. It could present some issues because if 84 closes down, they're also going to close down 14 to any kind of heavy truck traffic. They don't want everybody coming across the river and utilizing that road, so they'll shut that down as well. So there'll be no truck traffic again. It'll be going around Mount Hood to get up to the eastern Oregon landfills and eastern Washington landfills. So a lot of issues trying that. Recycling, we're going to talk about later. The question came up earlier. We were in the newspaper twice in the last weekend because of a fire at West Van. So we had a small amount of recycling that was wedged down in between a couple of walls. And it sparked, something sparked it, we're not sure exactly. Jordan Berkeley, our operations manager, had the joy of spending the night there on fire watch on Friday night. And the fire department came down, flushed the site with water, was unable to put it out. Jordan and the team were able to dig it out the next day. It took until about 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock on Saturday, we were kind of able to get out. So about 24 hours, just kind of there smoldering. We evacuated all staff, so we shut the sort line down about 3-4 hours before they normally would shut down for the day. But in general, not much damage, really just kind of more of a hassle than anything else. So. Let's see what else we got. We're preparing for weather right now. It's obviously a big conversation this time of year for the garbage and solid waste system. So we're expecting, it's a La Nina year, so we're expecting to have something similar to last year. I think last year we had 13 days of impact on garbage service in Clark County. We're hoping it's not the same number as most I've seen in 14 years I've been around, but could be a bad year, so we're talking about what we're going to do differently. We have improved our social media presence. We've built a new website, and we're trying to kind of just interact with customers a little differently, a little bit better this year. We saw our call blasts that we do. That's a very effective tool for us, and we'll send that out as soon as we know that there's an issue. Well, not at 4 o'clock in the morning, but whenever people are awake, we'll send out blasts as much as we can. I'm working on rates with all the staff right now. We're expecting, you know, our volumes up for garbage are up about 4% year over year, and we're expecting the same to continue next year. So the economy in Clark County continues to be quite strong. The biggest challenge we have is the transfer stations see individual transactions, so not route truck material. They grew at a pace of about 17% year over year, which is really hard for us to handle all that traffic. That's probably the biggest problem we have, is just general traffic.
What's the 17%?
So it's non-route truck material, so it's, we call it third-party material, so it's nothing coming off of curbside service. It's either contractors hauling their own material or customers who are not on the curbside system hauling the material in on the weekend. Something like
17%?
That. Yeah. Wow. Pure tons are up 17%. So, you know, traffic-wise, probably not that entire amount, because a lot of it is demolition material on a larger scale. And then last thing, well, we have block foam. I don't think I mentioned that. Commercial block foam is now open at CTR. We charge $5 a yard for that. We open that up to any business that wants to bring it in. We just ask if you're a high volume generator that you contact us, and we'll arrange for a direct load to the processing facility, because we really can't handle, you know, 20, 30 yards of material all at once. We'd rather just take that straight to the processor. And then, obviously, we had Scott Campbell's service. Alan, Rich, Kim stopped by. Melissa was there. So appreciate everybody's support for that. It was a hard thing for our company to go through in the community, and I really appreciate everybody's support during that time. So.
That was very well done.
Yeah, was, yeah, great job.
14 years.
Yeah, off and on. A little county on the side, you know, a little Oregon on the side. I always keep my finger up here.
So. Thank you. Very, very good. By the way, I liked that on the email I get up before the day before my garbage is ready and everything else. I get a nice reminder. Don't put the plastic in the blue thing. No big deal with that, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, Rich and Tondra were the big drivers on that, so they deserve a lot of credit to get that up and running. Something we all talked about doing, but they, yeah. They really don't know, so.
Yeah. Nice to have that reminder that the app.
Yep.
Yeah.
Your new Facebook page, did it have some good stuff?
Yes, that's always fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Back to Travis, there's been
I agree with Doug and Mo, but the rest of the team to kind of fill in gaps in history. So, again, this is one of the many things I walked into already in progress, and then also, again, having a fire and then a crippling market collapse. Right, as you start your new job, it's also exciting. This is one thing that at least is now done, so that's exciting. Traditionally, there's large amounts of our program that have been historically funded by the Coordinated Prevention Grant from the Department of Ecology, which is funded through the Model Toxics Control Account, which is money divided amongst counties in Washington to deal with solid waste enforcement and solid waste prevention.
It's based on the petroleum.
The source of that, and then it's divided up amongst counties, traditionally by population, and then depending on where they are, it's divvied up even further to cities or depending on what the agreements are. So that funding over the last couple of years has been reduced significantly year over year, leading up to this point where they have not passed the capital budget at the state, which would release what funds are in that account to governments to do solid waste work. And in order to continue to support our program, we had been taking a financial hit by funding these programs ourselves out of which we had typically been reimbursed by the states, by this CPG, Coordinated Prevention Grant. In order to ensure that we could continue to do the work that we were doing, took a proposal to increase the tipping fee for solid waste to county council in order to recover the funds that we had lost and did not foresee getting in the near future, depending on when the capital budget is passed, and if so, what the funds look like when it comes out. So, County Council unanimously approved a $1.43 per ton increase in solid waste in Clark County, effective on January 1. So right now we're working on finishing the letters getting all the right signatures on the right documents and the letters sent out. But that ordinance was approved unanimously on September 27th. Don't quote me on that. That doesn't sound right. So it was at the county council meeting in September.
So that's just the curbside. That's not the 17% that you're hearing.
It will be on that.
It will be on that too as well.
We have all waste in Clark County that is intended for disposal. So basically, so drop boxes.
It'll be charged at the transfer station.
Yeah. Okay. And that $1.43 we worked with. I wasn't here when it happened, but that was finance and our program staff kind of identifying what programs and what the costs were, and that amount of money will continue to allow us to support our programs as is and continue to grow. So. Did I miss anything, Mike or Cam or Rich, that are significant portions of history that maybe I missed out on? Or?
Are you going to talk about the property acquisition then?
We can. I mentioned it already, actually.
Yeah, just that there's additional work clauses in the contracts for capital acquisition. There's also additional work clauses for changes to operations that impact the contractor. They can go either way. Either the contractor can request additional work, give compensation for that additional work, or the county can ask for a proposal for additional work. In this case, we've been looking at a deceleration lane at Central Transfer Station southbound in for many years. We've got plans that are sitting there ready to go, but we got shot down by the prior property owner to the north. And as a development was starting in 2015, late 2015 or 16, or was it already in 16?
for this property?
For the property. It was 16.
It was 16.
Yeah, so they put them on. They basically, he had heard about this, the developer, and approached Waste Connections about buying the property. He wanted to see the deceleration lane go in, and so that gave us an opener, which we had previously not had, because it's not a county project per se. So we did not have eminent domain, and our probably only shot at getting this property before this thing gets developed. And so we actually went through the additional work process, and it's all laid out in the contract. And the actual transaction occurred, or the request to actually approve the additional work came in about this time last year, which left us little time to get our act together for a 217 tip fee adjustment. So we agreed to work this process through and get it on this year's tip fee. It was $110,000, and we spread that out over the cost of or over the remaining years of the contract, and the amount of tonnage, it came out to 8 cents a ton. So in addition to that, $1.43, there was an additional work added to that for 8 cents, or a total of $1.51. So the good thing is we've got that right away now, and as we go through the regional system study, we'll ferret out what, you know, what funding mechanisms and how we want to do this, and what other capital improvements, if any, we want to make at Central as we move into that improvement as well. The cost of that deceleration lane is pretty staggering because of the amount of utilities in that right of way, and also there's a failing stormwater system that needs to be repaired that is, you know, the county / Waste Connections problem, because it's washed off. That's how they operate. And so we're set up to do that. The most recent update from WashDOT is that there's development activity now occurring down around 107th at the church, potentially residential development off to the west side of Hydro. And on the east side, that rodeo that's over there, they're looking to move north towards Battleground and sell that property for development. And there's been an ongoing property dispute there that's held that up, and that's just about resolved. So what I'm being told by WashDOT is that sooner than later, I don't know if that's 1 year, a year, 2 years, how, you know, what this time frame is, but 107th will be signalized. It's been on the books for quite a while. It was waiting for additional development to trigger it, and then the median that's currently kind of stops down there will be extended up to the median that's run south of Prairie High. At this time, they're talking about a northbound left turn pocket. There will not be an ability to turn left out of the transfer station northbound once that median goes in. So
if you go all the way to 99th to turn around?
Or they'll have to go right down to 99th or 107th to do a UE down there.
With the big trucks?
The bigger trucks will have to go to 99th and turn into development. We've already ascertained that. So that's coming. But that's why we did this. And as we work through the regional system study, we'll talk about these funding mechanisms that are available to us and work through those and be asking for recommendations from SWAC and the Regional Steering Committee on what non-capital actions we can take to improve the system, and capital actions. So obviously the deceleration lane is very high on that list of capital actions. Anyone who's been out there on a weekend and has seen how long the lines are to get into that facility, and the fact that the folks are stopped on that road is an accident waiting to happen. So at least getting them off the road while they're queued makes it a much safer situation. And if we in fact expand that facility, which will also be discussed in the regional system study, It creates a ton of queuing space, and we'll have them off the road and entering that facility at a much slower speed. People just, you know, basically fly from that light, slow down, bam, you know, turn right into that facility. And so it's, even when the traffic is light, it's a scary situation. So this is kind of a first step to alleviate that, but we're a long ways from getting that deceleration lane permitted and approved. So that's sort of the update on why that was purchased and where we're heading with it.
Well, keep us updated, because, you know, it was pie in the sky for a long time whether we'd even get the property, you know.
Correct.
Now we need to know when they're going to start. Maybe we should all run out there with a shovel, you know.
Well, I think the next big struggle will be working with the utilities to make sure we have enough easement for the utilities and get all that dealt with. That was the only thing that was left up in the air when the project was shelved with the recession.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mike. Okay. So we're going to talk on Chinese here. Let's hear your Chinese.
I feel like anything I would say, so I don't want to put you guys on the spot, but I feel like you guys have a pretty good grasp of the numbers. I know Jordan sounds really smart when I talk about this. Yeah, so essentially, and I just love the names of these programs, but China is, you guys are familiar with their green fence that came about a couple of years ago that put higher restrictions on plastic quality heading overseas from the United States. Recently implemented a new part of the green fence entitled the National Sword, which was filed with the WTO back in July, which basically puts a series of, what you call them, successive contamination rates. What you call it, basically right now, they're basically starting at a certain level that they're going to be rejecting loads of mixed waste paper bound to their ports. If the contamination is higher than, I'm going to say 1.9% right now.
I believe it's 1.5.
1.5. We're at 1.9.
We are at 1.9.
That's okay. Yep. So 1.5% contamination. And it's going to be, I think they're also reviewing them much more closely, right? They're actually breaking open more loads to determine that contamination rate. So again, that's materials that are not paper that shouldn't be in there being in there. And they're breaking open more loads to kind of get over some of the maybe, I don't know, tricks of the trade, but ways to maybe be a little bit more disguising the contamination that's potentially in the bales, so they're breaking more bales open to determine that. And then the next step in their successive restrictions is at point, I don't know, I can't remember,
0.3%.
0.3% will be the next contamination restriction, so anything above 0.3%, they have said that they will begin to reject. That is the overview of the situation. I would much rather have Waste Connections talk about what their experience has been with this so far and what approaches that they have taken proactively to handle this.
So from our perspective, so we at the West Bend Material Recovery Facility, so I'm just going to call it MRF going forward, we process about 7,500 tons a month historically of commingled material. About 4,500 of it, 5,000 tons of that comes from Clark County, all the cities in the county combined. The rest comes from Eugene, Columbia County, some stuff from the Gorge, a little bit from Portland. And we bring that additional material in because Clark County itself is too much for us to run on one shift, but not enough to fulfill a second shift. So we brought that material in to help us more easily be able to process the Clark County material and add some jobs and a lot of other good factors to the community. So over time, we basically run our line at somewhere between 23 and 25 tons an hour. With the new restrictions that went in place, our bales were probably, our mixed waste paper bales were probably coming out about 5% contamination, which was not bad. We hear stories of most other MRFs in the area producing bales of paper that were somewhere between 13 and call it 15 to 16% contaminated. So a lot of times you'll have communities that are very proud of their recycling programs, and they should be, because they're recovering, you know, 95% of it. And the reason they're getting 95% is because they're shipping a lot of junk to China and calling it recycling. And China eventually just got sick of it. We've historically had very clean material, which has been nice. We've built up a good reputation over time. When this hit a couple months ago, we immediately had to slow our sort line down to about 15 tons an hour. So we lost that much capacity. The hard part is, you know, obviously we're not going to cut off Clark County. We wanted to try and help some of the markets around the Portland area as much as we could, because we operate pretty cohesively as a group. And that left Eugene. We allowed Eugene to come in for a little while, but that material just was coming at such a crush that it came out to the outside the building pretty quickly. So we had to cut Eugene off to down to a small amount of material. Problem for Eugene is they had no place to go at that point, because every other MRF in the Northwest has got material coming out the door. So I'm not entirely certain what they're doing with it. I believe that they take it to International Paper, which has a facility in Lane County, but I believe that they don't have the capacity to sort it. From what I've heard, they were baling it and stockpiling it unsorted and doing whatever they're going to do with it. So that's kind of where we got to about a month and a half ago. We're still processing about 13 to 15 tons an hour. Jordan and his team are always kind of tinkering with the machine down there, trying to find the magic mix to produce good quality bales. Like Travis said, we're at about 1.9% right now on our paper. Most plastic, so like a mixed rigid plastic, is pretty much not moving anymore. A lot, that was a pretty heavily contaminated material over the years, and markets were willing to take that contamination. But again, they were bales that were full of a ton of garbage, or just materials that couldn't be used. Kind of the wishful recycling items kind of got into those mixed rigids, and you can ship them off and get credit for diverting. But we're really down to just kind of the core plastics at this point. We're still doing yogurt and butter tubs, kind of smaller ones. But any of the larger mixed rigids, we're not finding a home for. The paper, like I said, 1.9%, that seems to be a good enough percentage to keep material moving. The good thing that's happened is a lot of this cleansing of the material in the Northwest has allowed some of the local mills to come back online. They stopped purchasing domestic material because it was so contaminated, they just couldn't use it anymore. And China was so willing to buy it, everybody just continued to feed China, and the domestic mills shut off from that. But we're starting to move some material domestically, which is nice. I don't know if that will continue or not. I can tell you that we added about maybe 4 or 5 headcount to each shift and slowed the machine down. So processing costs probably went up, $20 to $30 a ton. Which has become quite expensive, and in the realm of the way the Clark County project works, you know, we lose quite a bit of money on the recycling tonnage that comes in the door from Clark County. We lose about somewhere between $40 to $50 a ton on that recycling at the transportation, just because of the way we're compensated for it. So it's a real challenge for us. But we're still moving material, which is good news, and prices seem to be recovering a little bit. It seems like the Chinese issue, they flushed out a lot of the issues, and they're... We don't get the sense that they're going to hold to the 0.3% because we are continuing to move material at 1.9%. So, but we'll see. Still kind of wait and see until we get through to January 1st.
And can you remind me, one of the things that was interesting to me was the fact that we ship a load off, and they kind of started this after we'd already shipped some materials off. Right. So it's kind of a 3-week delay on knowing when we ship, or when it's bought, so when a broker buys it and it gets sent off, there's a 3-week delay on when those first loads that have gotten there have been.
Yep, I think the first reduction to 1.5% was going to be effective either November 1st or 15th, I can't remember. And so you work back like 3 to 4 weeks from that, and that's when all the brokers stopped buying material, because they didn't want to buy a load of paper and have it get stuck in transit or rejected in China. So they stopped buying for a period of time there, and that's what caused a lot of this glut. Then they've been able to continue to move material. We work with 4 or 5 different paper brokers, so they're kind of creatively finding different markets, whether it's domestic. Some have moved on to Vietnam or India or, you know, wherever else in Asia that they can find to move material. It's just that much more expensive. and there's that much more material. I heard one of them make a comment on a DEQ call the other day, which basically said, you know, you can move to all those different markets all you want, but out of the 21 days a month that we're producing material, that really is only going to take up 2 days of that material. So you still got to find a home for that other 18, 19 days worth of paper that's being produced on the West Coast or in the United States in general. So it's really hard to move that. But, you know, we're kind of expecting, you know, that January 1st cutoff, if we're going to see something, it's going to be in the next week or two that we would see some sort of hands off on it.
Wall Street Journal reports that there's still big demand for it. They yeah. need to have it.
They need to have it, right.
They need to have it. They just want to clean it up, and I don't just see a problem with that.
No, and I think that's what everybody's feeling like. This is going to force the American market to clean up the material, which is a good thing, and then once we get through this first little bit, it'll probably be okay. We'll probably be in decent shape.
So if it gets rejected, do they just dump it then? They don't bring it back, right?
They ship it back.
Really?
And then the brokers basically get 3 strikes and then they're out, so their license can be revoked, so they're very sensitive about it. So if they get a load rejected over there, it's one of their 3 strikes, so they don't want that to happen. And they're working on licenses right now, and that's another one of the issues. When are they going to reissue licenses for imported material? And we don't know how that's going. It's very hard to get information about what's going on. So we're understanding.
There's a lot of other demographics in this too. You know, they used to. China's becoming more wealthy, and just like everybody else, they don't want to play in this game. As it goes on, so the article I read was that along the coast. Where all of our stuff comes in like this, that the people are wealthier. But if they push it into the country where the farmers are, and this is something they could do in the past or whatever, there's still a demand. Thank you very much.
So just one last update on our end. You may have seen there was we were sort of being regionally where we are located next to Portland and Oregon, and the situation being a little bit more dire for Oregon, not being able to easily throw recyclables in the garbage, released a series of press releases which forced our hand to release something very quickly a couple of weeks ago. And then so we're kind of getting a team together of all of us to kind of start talking about how we kind of continue this messaging to be open and honest, but use this as an opportunity to talk to the public since it's become a heightened media topic, to kind of make sure that we're being communicative with the public on what this means for us and what we're doing, but how we can, prevent this from getting worse or prevent this from, to encourage them to participate in a way that gets this, that guarantees we can continue getting our material.
Well, you can tell in the media that there's a lot more interest in this. There's articles in, even our own local paper. I gave you probably 14 clips today of different things about recycling.
It was a trending article title. Was the top trending article on the Colombian's website for quite a few successive days. I don't know what metrics they used to determine what the top trending article is, but it was up there in the trending articles for quite a while. I'm surprised.
Thank you. Well, I disappear as a snowbird pretty quick here, so we have to come up with a vice chair to take over for at least the February meeting. We have a volunteer.
Well, I'll volunteer to be the vice chair, but I know that Thursday I'm going to have a schedule conflict. So if somebody can do it on the internal, I can adjust my schedule for the years going forward to make sure I don't have a schedule conflict.
Could we change the date?
That's fine with me. You want to do it on the second Thursday instead of the first Thursday?
Anybody have a problem with that?
I'm not sure what December looks like because of the holiday.
February.
The second
Thursday is the 8th.
That's not
too bad.
No.
February. I can do the second Thursday in February. I am available.
Okay. Is there a motion that we elect Steve as the vice chair? Have our meeting on the 8th?
So
second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. You're hired.
I'll be there.
Thank you for doing that. Okay. Now we get down to the paper trail here. Kim? What do we got on the bylaws that you need to chew up?
Well, first, I wanted to give a recruitment update. So we did go out and try to recruit someone to fill the business representative. We only received one application, and so we want to go out and recruit again and try to get more applicants for that position. So that's why that role has not been filled yet. And then we do need to fill the position that Scott had. And Derek had mentioned possibly stepping in to fill that role until when Scott's term limited, is what I assumed.
Yeah, Waste Connections would like to, you know, fulfill that commitment, and we'd like to continue that on. So whatever we can do in that capacity.
So,
do we need a motion on that?
Well, it's not really outlined in the bylaws, so I wanted to get your guys' opinion about that. Us from the county, do you think that seems appropriate? But I didn't want to step forward without talking to the group.
Any discussion? As I mentioned, Derek's got 14 years, and I've worked with him on a couple of things. We went up to Findlay Buttes, and he was very good at explaining things and very knowledgeable, as you can tell. And I'd like to have him on the committee. Any other discussion?
It's not openly discussed in the bylaws. It's not openly against it. So okay. I would make the motion to bring Derek on to fulfill Scott's term.
Any second?
Second.
Any discussion again?
Last chance.
Last chance.
I guess it's not how long Scott's term is.
You're 2025.
Yeah.
Okay, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Okay, Derek, you're hired. What we're doing.
Thanks, Drew.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate that.
And Stephen's term was scheduled to end at the end of this month, but he has accepted another term, so that's great.
Thank you.
And Simone, when she finds out, she can we'll hear back on that. So, with that said, after I hear back from Simone, well, I'd like to pair recruitments if possible, so that we're not like, you know, recruiting this person and this person. And so I'll then go out for the once someone knows that she can stay or not. I'll go out and try to recruit the business for the second.
Has Sarah turned to try to recruit? It seems like her number.
Yeah. So she'll do that again.
Yeah.
I think it was in the green thing I just got today. There was a little blurb at the bottom that they were looking for a business rep for us.
Awesome. Any questions about recruitment or anything? So bylaws review, it's been a year since we looked at, we changed this last year at this meeting in November. So I thought it'd be good to at least annually kind of review bylaws for any updates, especially since we did make a number of changes, that now's a good time to see if the changes, you know, if it's been good, or if we need to change things up again. Or, you know, maybe we do need to put something in about, or not, about, you know, people stepping into role of finished terms, or any changes with regard to attendance policies or anything, really.
Well, how often has this come up that we needed to fill a vacancy? So this is basically a first occurrence type situation?
For like people ending early.
Turning out?
Or no, like if people end, if they like left early from their position, and then there was, you know, still 2 years left.
Right.
If someone could step in to fill that term, or do we have to go out for open recruitment every time someone leaves, whether it's early or not?
And it's quite a problem countywide if you notice there's, you know, ours is just one of these, you know, you're busy, you're countywide, there are advisory commissions for everything.
And six.
Yes.
Well,
Any discussion on, are there any significant changes from the last November to this November that you recall?
Okay, I just wanted, you know, I think it's good for us to at least spend some time dedicated to looking at the bylaws, maybe on an annual basis, or however, so if you could add any suggestions. And you can also, you know, send this for a while, email me, maybe just send them in a tweet to you, if there is something. Whether or not, maybe we should add a line about people stepping in for terms.
An interim appointment.
Yeah.
Kim, under attendance, under attendance, under B, was that two absences, is that based off of 12 meetings, or is that on the four? I don't know if that was...
Yeah, so it's on the idea of that 50%, so since there's only four meetings.
So if you just said, okay.
Yeah, and it's only unexcused absences, so... So right now, it's absent for 50% of all the administrators or has accrued two or more unexcused absences. So the 50% does include excused absences.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
In number four, we had had in the former bylaws a section. Oh, no, it's here. Barring exceptional circumstances. Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go. That's still there.
It's not, but there's nothing about subcommittees if you want to have anything, but since we meet quarterly, mm-hmm. there it seems like there is room for subcommittees. But.
Just that they can be created or?
Yeah, that you can create a subcommittee. I think when you have subcommittee language, you should say that kind of there's a chair identified and a purpose statement created other than just a random group, but I don't know if that's necessary, but people know about the team.
Yeah, I think we did under meeting G voting, I think we did have a piece of email if we need to vote on something like an interim quarterly meetings or something. Not just with this group, but we've had in the past.
Was that mostly during the solid waste management update?
Plan updates years ago, yeah. I don't think we did one on the last one, but early, you know, we'd have breakout groups. There is one piece I noticed on under meetings under C. It says the meeting may be canceled by the chair for lack of a quorum. Mm-hmm. And then under F it says quorum of meeting of the SPAC could be held with any number of members present, which could be one. So I'm not sure if that's consistent or if we'd want to tweak that a little bit. Or.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's
fine.
Which would you change?
I mean, it seems like a quorum maybe should be three or four people, maybe at least.
50% of both seats plus one. I guess you have majority.
I know that sometimes it's a challenge to get that, but maybe with the quarterly schedule, maybe not so much.
That was one of the reasons we went to the quarterly was with that sort of promise that you have to make it to those four meetings, but when you have then less meetings you have to go to. So that wanting to change it to reflect 50% possible.
Or a majority of the filled seats. Because currently we have seven, so we can't really say we need four because. Correct.
Yeah.
So if we were to define that, you know, given how difficult it is to fill commission seats, you know, a simple majority of filled seats.
change for a majority?
5F.
Majority?
5F to the finance forum.
I've got the whole version.
Okay. So, sure, it says any number of members present to change that to a simple majority of built seats.
Okay.
Do we need to discuss it or vote on it or do it?
Well, I can put it together. I mean, if you want to make a motion to change that, and then I can email out those changes.
I would make a motion to change number 5F to define a quorum as a simple majority of filled seats.
Discussion. He's made a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
Do you think in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Anything else to the good of the party on the bill of bylaws? Any public comment? Anything from the good of the party in the back or front? Or?
Do you want to talk about the landfill?
Yes. I guess it was 3 weeks ago, or a couple, I don't know, time flies for me. We got two big vans and we took the volunteers and many of us I was, I guess, the only SWAC person there. Anyway, we went up to Finley Butte, up in Boardman, and saw the cells being made and the garbage being dumped. The tipsters, they take the great big 40-foot containers right on the truck, and the truck and all goes up, and those new ones that they that you guys are using out of Washougal. Well, I was surprised. They have to go almost vertical before that little gut part of it dumps out. Mm-hmm.
Cause they're awesome.
Because they're like wood chip trucks, you know. Mm-hmm. And the first part comes out okay, but then they have to go almost to vertical before that last bit comes out. But I guess you get about 30% more volume or cube doing that. And we also... of course, got to go up through the burned out area, and I was surprised. I can't see a whole bunch from the road. There was a lot of, you know, somebody was cutting down trees and doing things, but I thought it would be worse than it was, but it still was interesting. And then we went to, what's the other plant?
Owasco.
Okay. And I had never been there before, and this is where garbage from Washougal goes, and that was interesting. It's right in the middle of cherry orchards and apple orchards and whatever, and supposed to be good for many, many more years. The Finley Butte one, the mountain of trash that they're building, it's going to be a big butte when they get through. I guess it's a couple hundred years they figure they can fill that place. But
100 feet tall, is that what I heard?
Oh,
1,000 feet tall.
It's going to be a butte when it's done. I'll put it in. It was so interesting. For those that don't know, they also collect the gas, the methane gas from the.
I've never seen that.
They have pipes under the throughout the whole system, and they collect the methane gas and push it down, and they drive three big generators for electricity and feed it into the grid, the electrical grid down there, Bonneville's electrical grid. And then the exhaust is vented across the way, and they dry onions, all kinds of onions. And when we were there, a big truck came up with, really big truck, like a demolition truck, full of white onions. And I thought they'd be just plain old onions, but no, these are some kind of evidently really strong, smelling, tasty onions, and they say they can make everything from onion salt to the ones you put on your beans and the casseroles and that. And they use the heat, of course, from the burning of the methane to to dry the onions, and I thought that was really, talk about reuse, you know, good idea there. I always enjoy it, and plus it's you get to meet many of the solid waste people and see what they do and talk about various things too, so I enjoyed it a lot. I also have been involved in the parks cleanup. I personally go out, and I was out last Saturday for 3 hours down by the courthouse and picking up cigarette butts. It was a Butt Stops Here Day that the county and the city put on it. And I think we got 7 pounds of cigarette butts, which doesn't sound like much, but it's thousands and thousands. You know, a cigarette butt only weighs like 1/16 of an ounce. And I had a baggie full when I got through because I was on the west side of the courthouse and there was a lot of them over there. And so these opportunities are out there. And so anybody that's interested, of course, can do that.
Did you have a grab or did you have to actually pick the one?
I have a whole bunch of these things because we do it for, we picked up the 139th one or one, yeah, one, 179th, 179th. Anyway, we pick up the overpass up by Legacy Hospital, and I got the things are $1.99 at Harbor Freight, and they work slick. So I don't handle any of that if I can help it. Another thing you can do, Ellen, at one of the educational people from Waste Connections, conducts a They watch the containers being put on the barges, and that's my next project. I like to see how the containers are put on the barges. So she and I are working on the LNIs. I'd like to commend the staff for all the public, but like we said, because of the Chinese thing and everything else, the refuse pickup, leaves falling, everything else. There was certainly a lot of good publicity about taking care of our community and making things right. So that was pretty much it. Anything else for the good of the party?
I would like to pick the Waste Connection guys' brains for a second. I'm the chair of my neighborhood association, and a common complaint that I'm hearing is folks rummaging through their recycling, collecting cans and things. They want to put locks on their garbage cans, and, you know, I'm with you on that one. So I'm asking for your suggestions. What are the best things that I can pass along to them?
It's something that we are seeing more of. With the bottle bill in Oregon going up to 10 cents, it's certainly become more of an issue this year. We can see it because our glass proceeds are down from fairly substantially from where we thought they would be. So we're assuming that's probably the bottle bill. Pots are a little hard for us to figure out, but so we haven't policed it a ton in the past. There are some communities where they have a neighborhood guy where this is an unnamed city in Clark County where the city is okay with him taking all the bottles and cans out of everybody's bins, and so we've kind of kept an arm's distance, keep them all happy. He reinvests in the some veterans program or something. I don't know if he's still doing it, but so in the past we kind of kept a little bit of the hands off, but certainly it's something where we're getting more and more calls about it lately. So we're trying to be a little more aggressive, and we'll call the non-emergency hotline for the police, whatever, the police, sheriff, whoever it is. It's not a high priority, I don't blame them, but we're pursuing it as much as possible because we're hearing more and more customers that are really interested in ensuring that you know, goes the right way and is handled the right way.
Their primary concern is folks coming up on their property and rummaging. It's not even, you know, but most of them are, if my can's out on the curb, what do I care?
Yeah.
It's more of the, you know, how can they be dissuaded from coming up there in the first place?
Right. So, I would probably actually push that back to city and county staff, because that's, I mean, we're really handling the cart once it's on the curb,
right.
But you're talking about almost trespassing kind of issue.
Right. I was just curious if you had any ideas other than putting your can out of sight or, you know, anything like that. So.
They're the best. I know City of Vancouver, you guys have like a website that is dedicated to the best practices. And so one of those is not putting it out the night before, putting it out that morning, between either early in the morning. for our
study. 6 o'clock.
Yeah. And then also, if they're going on people's property, then that's trespassing.
Correct.
And also, they can call the non-emergency line to at least report that this is happening, because the more people that report it, the more.
You know,
yeah, and sure. Well, then it can also then be highlighted as more of an issue. Sure. You know.
And I think trespassing is probably more of an issue than in the scale of things. I would imagine the police are going to be more interested in that than they are on theft of recyclables. So I would hope they would.
We tell people not to confront them.
Right.
The person but they call them in. It's good.
Yeah.
311?
Yeah. 311. And yeah. Still state this is not an emergency because it still goes to the same Cressa dispatch. Mm. So you don't want to call 311. Good to state that this is not an emergency.
And I hate to tell you to hide your carts and all that, because then we'll never find them. When that day when you don't have it up at 2 o'clock, you have your cart.
So one thing that's happening, I was working on a project for my other job, and bottle return folks, and they actually have security now who are checking incoming bottle returns, and they're asking people to show their license or a receipt that the product was purchased in Oregon, because they're cracking down on Washingtonians coming over and trying to take advantage of the return. On the doors it says Oregon only, no Washington residents. So they
that's
know
the one on Jansen Beach over there, or Delta Park is a little busy.
Yeah, they know that there is that activity going on. And, you know, the homeless population, that's kind of difficult. But you drive up in a car with plates, and, you know, they're out there in the parking lot, and I've seen them at the door checking people.
Wow.
So, you know, financially, that's got to be a hit for them to have to accommodate two states versus what they're prepared to, you know, take care of. And the other thing I wanted to say was, I had a brainstorm. Again, I always talk about, you know, we're on the receiving end of the waste stream when we talk about recycling and our role in terms of that end of the product life cycle. But I always go back to the manufacturing and the packaging people, and I really wish we could consider, and I don't know how feasible this is, but consider a manufacturer or a packaging representative on this body of, you know, of the commission, because I think that would add a perspective that might be impactful. I was at I met some folks from Costco, again, my job, and I was talking with some regional managers, and they didn't know about the article that Jake Thomas, you know, did in Columbia, and that was a really great synopsis of the problem with the contaminated recycling materials. And he actually gave me the name of the Costco sustainable person. She's apparently regional, and he said she would be very interested in that information. And so I was just going to email her, you know, link to the article. But I really think there's a piece there that needs to be addressed. I don't know if it would be appropriate for our, you know, on our end to be doing that, but that definitely has an impact on, you know, what we're doing and what the customers are having to deal with, and so that was my one thought that I wanted to contribute.
Well, we were just talking about that at the landfills earlier today, is what, you know, we're dealing with a lot of these. We're at the end of the life of this product, and these systems were designed based on products that existed that don't necessarily exist the same way with lightweighting of plastic and shifting of materials that have other environmental benefits or other economic benefits, but now the system that exists can't take those sorts of things. So how do we... So I was just asking if you knew, like, what to what extent is there lobbying from the waste industry or the MRF industry or us, then there's product stewardship and extended producer responsibility type thing, but is there any... How aware is the manufacturing industry of the fact that we're having this problem, and is there any upstream communication from
Great.
So I don't know that it's happening or where it's happening or what it looks like, but the things that we're getting are changing more rapidly than we can adjust to, it seems like. So what was going in the recycling cart 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago looks incredibly different than what it looks like right now. How do you build a new Murph every 6 months just because Coca-Cola decided they just want a new bottle shape or make plastic out of the new material? How do you do that? So.
Right. And a vendor like Costco has a huge impact, you know, on the manufacturing side, and they can work with them pretty closely because they're
Does a business like that, they also sort of internally process like cardboard. I mean, they see, I know that they will collect the material that's in there, and then they will kind of internally broker that out or distribute it back out.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, but they're selling product to the customer.
Yeah.
And then that's what we're dealing with, all that stuff that's coming out of the store in the customer's carts and then into the waste stream.
I'm on the green team, like I said, at Legacy Hospital, and we've gone from the plastic clamshells to the, you can't see through, brown colored, you know, clamshells, and, you know, again, they're full of food, you can't reprocess them, but at least it's going to be compostable, you know, like supposedly our cup is. Anything else for the good of the order?
Well, is there not, as far as maybe moving this forward, is there... That sounds like a good opportunity, at least to get someone in to, as a guest, to visit with us, at least talk about it moving forward. So will that be a possibility to contact this person at Costco and see if they'd be willing to come in?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Sure, try.
To relationships, like the carton, like all the like industry, lobby groups, or...
We had that legacy, we had the Dixie Cup people come in. Because we're still using styrofoam cups.
Oh.
And we're a hospital, but we're still using styrofoam cups. Now, the cafeteria gets nice legacy paper cups, but if you just go to the water cooler, you get a styrofoam cup. And we argue and argue and argue about this, but we cannot win this battle.
Oh, man.
I can't believe it. But we had actually had the people come down from Fife. I think there's a big Dixie cup company or whatever, Fife. They came down, a couple of people, and visited with us at one of our green team meetings. But we still playing with it.
I think I have something. Just thought I'd introduce the concept that the organization I'm working for, Slow Food, is developing of a regional food festival, Slow Food Cascadia. It's an event that we're looking to host down on the Vancouver waterfront. There'll be a lot more of kind of like education, academics around farming and food, but also food festival. But why I bring it up here is I do want to have a big focus on food waste at the event. So I know the easy ways to do that is just to make sure master composters have a big presence there. But just thought I'd open that idea. And we're shooting for October of 2018 and starting in the first year, we're shooting for like 2,000 people that want us to scale it up to closer to 10,000 as we start growing. And the organization Soul Food is an international organization that is what we've really done best is our gatherings. So we just helped hosted a gathering in Denver that had 25,000 people this summer. And we're really known for our international gathering in northern Italy, Terra Madre, 200,000 people. So it is an event that we want to host down the Vancouver waterfront and want to have a big focus on food waste. So just thought I'd bring it up. So.
One idea at the Washington State Recycling Conference this year.
Yeah.
They had a speaker from, I think it's Ugly Fruit and Veggie Campaign, something
like
that. Yeah. And that's an interesting concept. Perfect. Yeah, it's kind of, he calls it Ugly.
Okay.
But that's like his website.
Yeah.
Not with the idea of it's terrible, but more kind of fun.
Yeah. We are having an event coming up soon that will be talking about kind of unveiling the Slow Food Cascadia event, but it'll also be a nice dinner down at Warehouse 23. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, if we still cleared our thing, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. And I guess for our next get together, your next get together, I'm going to be gone. It'll be February 8th. Steve will handle the gavel. We're looking forward to seeing you then. And have a good holiday season.